Good afternoon, everybody. It is the last golf show of the year, believe it or not. Man, it is such a pleasure to see my buddy Ben Raza back sitting across from me here as we've shifted things around and maybe our stars haven't aligned for a little while, but we are back to bring us home. And we were just talking before, it feels like we've been doing this for like 2 years straight. When we came back from the COVID break, we haven't really had a week off. Even last year, the golf calendar was still filled. The European Tour was still doing their thing, so we were still working. But after this week, there actually is a little bit of a break, huh, Ben?
Thank God. I love golf, but it's been a long stretch of golf. And there's no doubt it swing season is fun, but I love to, you know, kind of compartmentalize what we've seen, get a little break, and then we'll use it to our advantage in January. We're going to have a lot of fun things. Me and Jason and the whole team are going to get in the lab and unveil a whole new PGA product come January. But I do want to say right off the top of the show, shout out to Eric Lindquist for getting married and then bring back the dream team. I have not done a show with you in far too long.
I know.
Very, very excited that we were able to make this happen.
Me too. And you know, I do love Eric. We go back and forth quite a bit, but it's great to get the originals back on here. Not going to lie, and I'm going to thank Prize Picks for sponsoring our show today. And I'm going to do something fun with Prize Picks. They don't post their golf stuff till Wednesday. So I'm going to play Prize Picks, and you're going to help me decide or help everyone else decide which way we want to go. So if you aren't familiar with the Prize Pick with their site, it is player props. And what you do is you pick anywhere between 2 and 5 props. And for example, if you want to check out the Thursday night football game, Mac Jones's line for passing yards is 239.5 yards. All you do is click over under there. You can match it up with one more or up to 4 more props from any sport. That's a really cool thing, Ben, I like. Excuse me. You get to do cross-promotional, cross-sport stuff. So what I want to do here is I want to set the line for opening round scores. And I'm going to give you two names, Harris English and Scottie Scheffler. And I'm going to set the line at 67.5. That's their opening round score. So I want you to pair that up with the over-under on Mac Jones's passing yards to tell me which way to go for our Thursday bet.
Yeah, man. So I'm very interested to see this because I think part of it is going to come down to we've got the old split courses. So yeah, are my sure guys – and now the interesting thing, and I think this is an outlier, we're going to get into this some more certainly, is will our guys be on Plantation and will that be the easier course? Because last time it wasn't, but I think more often than not when you get those extra par fives – that's going to be a big advantage over on Prize Picks, particularly if you're doing the single. But I look at that. I like where you're at. You can mix and match. You got Mac Jones. You boy, you must be excited as a Patriots fan. The rich get richer. Guy's pretty good.
He's not bad. I mean, listen, I'm a Tom Brady guy, so I'm a Bucks fan. Now, you know, I live in Tampa, so it's kind of hard not to be a Bucks fan. But when Brady retires, which you know is going to be in the next couple of years, I probably will go back to being a Patriots fan. However, Mac Jones, I'll take the over and I'll take the under on whichever golfer ends up at that 67.5. If that's the line, I think Scottie Scheffler's playing really well, and I think Harris English, who we're going to talk about here in a minute, coming in well-rested and playing some pretty good golf. So we'll get into them. And want to thank Prize Picks again, just to finish it off there. First promo, first deposit up to $100 free for using a promo code Osmo there. So up to $100. Take advantage of that. Now let's do a little bit of a fall recap then before we move on. And one of the things that I kind of noted when I was writing down the winners was we've had no real surprises. Maybe Lucas Herbert over at the Bermuda Championship, but this is the first fall that you've been analyzing golf that we haven't really seen to stand out from the Korn Ferry Tour, nor have we really seen that much of a surprise winner.
It's true. Like, you know, some of these guys, I feel like the fall swing is notorious for the guys that are going to break through. They get theirs, you know, the Maverick McNealys, he almost did it, but he didn't. You know, guys like Sam Burns and Homa, they kind of already had broken through. Sonjay, Rory, Hideki, Hovland, I mean, those guys are not even close to, you know, they're big time players. Lucas Herbert, you mentioned him, but the Bermuda, it felt like no matter who won, it was going to be weird because the whole field was garbage. So I'm with you. I don't know what it really says, but it's funny. All these guys, big time pedigree coming up, and they've been playing very well, but none of them have really been able to have that breakthrough win that we kind of anticipated.
Yeah, a couple of names that do worse standouts. Aaron Wise, Taylor Gooch, both.
Yeah.
I'd say played a pretty good fall. Something they definitely keep a lookout for in the new year. Sam Burns continues to just play astoundingly good golf right now. It's very cool to see. Lastly, the Korn Ferry Tour. We've seen Scottie Scheffler come out of there. We've seen Sung Jae-im come out of there. We've seen plenty of other great golfers. What is it about this year's class that maybe we're lacking that top-end talent? I mean, Chad Ramey gave us a little bit of our run for our money, you know, at the Shriners. But really, Ben, we haven't had any, you know, Aiden Buckley. He was the name, two top 10s. But even that's, you know, nothing really that spectacular.
No, it's true. And I think I'm a pretty good litmus test for that because I don't keep up with the Korn Ferry Tour that much. And those type of names I heard about, you know, when the Schefflers of the world were coming up and certainly when the Hovland Morikawa contingent, all those guys were coming up, I really didn't hear much about these guys. And you mentioned, you know, Ramey, I'm going to throw in Alex Smalley, who I've been pretty impressed with, yeah. But they don't come with the, this is a future superstar. Now, I think some of them will emerge, but it's funny that you say that. We really haven't had that star-studded class hit the ground running and immediately vault up the rankings.
It'd be interesting to see kind of what happens with that back end of the PGA Tour caliber players playing up maybe against these guys that are our weakest class since we've started. Again, maybe this all ends up being wrong. It's just kind of my observations that I've seen these, you know, six or seven tournaments here. So let's talk a little bit about Sea Island. It's not 132 players. I don't know why I wrote that. 156 players. They're going to throw half the field on the seaside course and half it on the plantation course for the first 2 days. It ended up being last year, you kind of alluded to this right at the top, basically the two courses were roughly the same in terms of average score to par. There wasn't really any advantage to start on one over the other. I would say maybe 15% of the field is localized here in Sea Island, which certainly makes the home game narrative, which we'll talk about in a bit, plentiful. Tons of fairways and greens. I mean, anything else we can say? It's a pretty course. I mean, it's a beautiful island there in between Savannah and Jacksonville.
No doubt. I mean, anytime you flirt with the coast, you're always going to have wind. You're going to have water potential. So you get some freaky things in there. You get some weird things. What that does, I think, on a macro level is when you look at anyone's course history who's played here a lot, they're going to have some missed cuts just peppered because it's just not, it's impossible to not have a couple of weird ones in there. So I think that's step one. And you mentioned two courses. I think for showdown, I want to ask you, you do our showdown content, obviously kill it there. Do you go heavy plantation or do you say maybe there's something to, even though you're losing the par fives?
Yeah, I think you have to just play them because of the par fives. The eagles and showdowns are just so key. And with the ability to get two more chances at that, I think it's just prudent to do it. Now, we will say that certainly some of the better scores from rounds one or two did come from Seaside last year. But you always want to just try and play the angles and certainly plantation giving you more birdie opportunities with the par fives is the way likely to go. Again, is that going to pan out every time? Definitely not. A couple more things about at least the Seaside course. 75% greens in regulation, roughly about 75% fairways in regulation as well. So when you have fairways and greens so easy to hit, do you like golfers that are already good at that? Or do you think golfers that are not good at that get a leg up?
Yeah. So that's like the age old question where it's like, oh, these are really like flat greens. And it's like, well, does that help Spieth who already putts great? Or does it help?
Or does it help Rio? Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if anything can help Kyle Stanley. We can't even use him in those examples, but to me, I do think there's an element that, you know, in a course like this, when you get wedges in your hand, you can bail yourself out by putting, but it's not just about hitting the greens because everyone's going to do that. Can you really dial in proximity wise to give yourself reasonable chances? So I do look to the type of players that are maybe more of those, I don't want to say iron specialists, but you know, we've seen it, Streb and Tyler Duncan types. Of course, Webb is always lurking around the board. You know, those guys at second shot, Austin Cook is a winner here. I think there is a theme there. Yeah, exactly. So that's how I would go about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we've seen some golfers that I would consider, like you said, iron specialists end up having some of their better performances here. But all of those golfers that you just mentioned that have won all have a can get really hot putting aspect to them, especially, you know, with Webb. Now, I don't know if Webb's won here or it's been a couple of years since he has, but he always seems to play well in these. And we'll certainly talk about him and what to do. Wouldn't be surprised if Ben and I getting back together brings out yet another fade in Webb Simpson, but we'll talk about that and see if that's going to end up being the case in a few minutes. One last thing I want to ask about, 156 players in the field, top 65 in ties. We should expect a very low 6 of 6 just because of the field size and the variability we're going to get from it. What is there anything different you approach when it is when we get 20 more players than we used to, or say 30 more?
So, I'm totally with you. It's going to be very difficult. I mean, I think the situation, it's not to say, oh, don't worry about ownership, because that's wrong. That's not what you want to do. But you do know this. If you get six guys through, no matter who they are, you're going to be doing pretty good things here. And if the scoring conditions are easy, the easier the scoring conditions, the more important 6 of 6 is, because you take advantage of your extra 36 holes per player. Now, if it's brutally difficult, like I'm not saying try to get guys cut, but you can take some more chances, I think, and survive. So it's really hard. Obviously, if there was a way to get 6 of 6, I would do that every time. But I do think when you're talking about the full field to the max with the 65 and ties, you really do want to say, okay, I'm looking for a little more made cut equity, but high variance sport like golf, I think we both know it's very hard to identify that.
Yeah. And hey, listen, DraftKings is actually one of the easiest PGA DFS scoring outlets. They only take away a half a point for a bogey, whereas FanDuel's taken away a full point for a bogey. And I think 2 points or three points for a double. So you saw last week, I mean, there were some negative rounds where it really didn't matter if you got 6 of 6. It just mattered if you ended up with 3 or 4 in the top five, Colcrack being one of them. 5% owned. So you mentioned ownership, and I just kind of mentioned ownership there with Jason Kokrak, the lowest owned golfer over 8,500 last week, ends up winning the tournament. So if you are just going against the grain and playing ownership, well, our ownership projections might be a perfect tool for you, part of our premium package, of course. And to get started, we're giving you 25% off your first week of Osmo Platinum by using PGA Strategy Show as your promo code. And right now, there's pretty much every sport under the sun going on except for MLB. We've got NBA, we've got NFL, we've got golf for this week, and so much more. So come on and check us out. And like I said, ownership, it was right there staring everybody in the face last week. Kokrak ended up coming through. So we're going to try and identify a couple of those golfers here, Ben, this week. But first, let's talk about what everybody is talking about, the home game. All right, you mentioned many of the golfers that have played well here do live here, but also have a mixed cut. Or a couple of those mixed in, Harris English, Kevin Kisner, right off the top, both have a couple of top fives, top tens, both a couple of missed cuts. So are you giving credence to the Sea Island boys this week, or are you just going to play where the lineup falls in?
So, yeah, I mean, is it bad that guys have familiar? No, that's good. But it's not to say that if you're not part of the Sea Island Mafia, you can't play well. And I think there's also something to be said. Even if Kisner didn't live here,
they actually like believe in them that self. Like it's great.
His skill set is perfect for this. So like, I think sometimes it gets used as the poster boy, like, oh, well, he lives here. That's why he plays good. Or it's just a perfect second shot course where he can lean on his putter and his irons. Yeah. So I think there's something to that. I do what I normally do. If I'm between two guys and I have them very close, our projections have them very close, and one of them is tied to the area, I think that probably would do it. I would lean to them, but I'm not going to say, oh, I love this guy, he checks out, but he's from Texas and he has no roots here, I can't play him. I think that's ridiculous.
Let's talk about Harris English. He is one of those golfers that is right now projected at around 5% this week. He hasn't played all that well, and now the 10,100 price tag certainly scaring some people off. Now, you know, even though we haven't done shows for a while, I've been a perennial fader of, say, Cameron Tringale. I ended up playing him last week at good ownership and got a good start out of him. So I'm kind of thinking of doing the same thing with Harris English this week, Ben. I know his price tag is very, very high, but if we're going to get 5% and he's going to give us another top 5 or 10, seems like a pretty good start here for him. Are you going to try and talk me off of that?
No, I mean, I think when you're getting, you know, major leverage, you can always make that case. It's a little scary because it was a back issue. Yep. You never know with what's going on there. The other thing about Harris English, I truly don't understand. He was putting at basically as good as anyone on the tour. And so he decided to switch putters, and then he lost 6 strokes putting at Shriners. I just don't understand. He legitimately had gained in seven straight events with the putter. And then he took the break and he came back at Shriners. He switched putters and he lost six strokes putting. So I don't know why he did that. I would hope he would go back to what got him there.
Golf, man. Golf. Golf is such a funny sport.
Like, why, dude?
And it's not like he's Dustin Johnson, who has a history of switching putters like every 3 weeks when he doesn't putt well. This is Harris English, who was legitimately ranked in the top 25 in strokes gained putting on the tour last year, and at times was the best putter on tour. Yeah, crazy. So interesting couple of notes there. Probably what's contributing to ownership, I'd say, a little bit. And when we talk about some of the other favorites here, there are plenty of more home game guys. And when we come across them, we'll certainly let you guys know. If you don't know that they already live there. But Scottie Scheffler, back-to-back top fives, a top five here back in 2019, part of that kind of standout Korn Ferry tour when he came out. Is this the spot that Scheffler gets it done, or is he going to be one of those never wins, always in the top 10 guys? I feel like that's where we're at with Scottie Scheffler right now.
I mean, certainly making that case. He's on the obviously Tony Finau trajectory. Maybe Tony's bucking that trend lately, but yeah, I mean, Scheffler's fantastic. He's someone that I kind of separate, because I don't think, when I think of his skill set, I don't think of RSM, but I don't think that matters as much because he's just such a good player. He can dominate off the tee, even at a course that doesn't require it. He can score with the best of them. He's one of, if not the best player in the field. So you mentioned a pair of top fives in recent weeks. He's going to be very, very good, obviously. But Webb is right next to him, and I think that's interesting because I'm not sure how many people will pair them. So maybe Scottie Scheffler's not that popular relative to the top guy, you know, in the pricing.
Yeah, and just a one last quick note on Harris English. When you get a situation where he's clearly going to be low-owned because of everything going on with him, does have probably a decent course fit, you know, given the fact that he lives there, got a top 10. Is this a situation where if you're playing multiple lineups, obviously you keep him in and maybe you do give him the leverage, but do you take him out of a main lineup, your say top lineup that you put in some of the single entry stuff because of the problems, or do you put him in there because of the ownership?
So I think that in smaller fields with a buck 56 and a 65, I probably would take him out, to be honest, just because I think that you don't really need to isolate like a 2% owned guy and something like that. If you get 6 of 6, there might only be a handful of people that even have 6 of 6. Yep. So in a large field tournament, Harris English, if he plays amazing, that's going to really separate you, but you don't need to, like, that's one thing I always try to tell myself. The goal is not to win like 100 man by 100 points. That'd be nice. But the goal is just to make the properly leveraged type of team in each tournament. You're not trying to blow the field away. You don't get points, extra bonus money for winning by like 1,000. So I think if you take too many risks, yeah, you may hit it once in a while, but you're not doing the optimal move, which is just risk profiling appropriately.
Then you get to somebody like Cameron Smith, who, if Harris English was healthy, no problems, matched up against Cameron Smith at this golf course, you probably get, you know, one guy choosing the other and the other guy choosing the other. Pretty even ownership. But because Harris English is hurt and Cam Smith is seemingly playing better, all of the ownership goes to him. Or at least that's the way it looks here in the beginning. Again, check out our ownership. But what do you do with a situation like that where, yeah, on the face, Cameron Smith looks like he could be a good play and probably one of the better plays in the field, but scorching ownership because of what's going on around him?
Yeah, that's a little tricky because I do think he makes a lot of sense. He's not a strong off the tee player. Crazy good irons, crazy, crazy good putter at times. I think for me, you know, you've got Webb lurking there, Scheffler. And then I also think, and we're of course going to get into this, the balance build. A lot of people are going to say, you know what, there's a lot of risk north of 10. I don't think these are the best players in the world. I'll save money and start in the 9. So I get Cam Smith. I think he makes a lot of sense, but I don't see a huge difference between him and some of these other guys. So to be honest, I would rather pivot more oftentimes than not.
Yeah. And listen, when we look at the stats from last week from Cam Smith, it's exactly what we want coming into a week where we know he's going to hit more fairways. He gained over 4 strokes on the approach and over 4 strokes on the putter, which one would say maybe that's why the ownership is skyrocketing. Because if he pulls that off again this week, he could win, given that he's probably not going to lose over 3 strokes off the tee like he did last week, just because there's 75% fairways versus about 50% last week down at Memorial Park. So Obviously a lot different there. Also up here, priced pretty highly this week, maybe a little bit of a sticker shock. I have Corey Connors, 9,900. And I know we have another guy a little bit more expensive that we haven't talked about, but who I'll get to. But Corey Connors at 9,900. I wanted to ask you about him. We're getting extremely good consistency, good ball striking, but we're not getting the top 10. So would you rather go and play Louis Oosthuizen, who has given us the top 10s this year, versus Connors, who maybe hasn't given us as much volatility?
Yeah, it's a tricky situation. You know, Connors, obviously, more often than not, he's held back by his putter. He's good enough with his ball striking to make the cuts and put together good performances, but it's hard to win and compete when you can't do anything with the putter. Now, Usti, he was the best putter I've ever seen for a stretch, but he's kind of lost. He's lost in four straight now. And I just worry about what's happened to him in that regard. So he's been very consistent too. He has not impacted the top 10 lately. And again, I think it's the same curse. You got to be able to putt because guys are too good these days. Someone's going to have a hot putter. You can't lose four or five strokes putting, expect to be in that first page.
It's an interesting note you mentioned. Louis lost in four straight. Is that what you said coming into this week? Look, yeah, the results just aren't followed. His ball striking isn't good enough, at least in my opinion. It hasn't shown us to be good enough to overcome that. So definitely something to note there. Really good point. All right, a couple more favorites here in the event that we want to talk about before we get into some building. Joaquin Niemann. I have admittedly been pretty on this guy the last couple of weeks. 2 weeks ago, he was priced cheaper than Mito Pereira, which was insanely crazy at the CJ Cup. He was 7,800 versus Mito being 8,100. And obviously, top five. We got a great start. Last week, we knew around the green would be a problem for him. It was. I was out. He was highly owned and missed the cut. Now he's not cheap, but he's not going to be that highly owned either. I think it's a better spot. Are you going to join me in playing Joaquin Niemann this week again, or are you saying a little too much for Joaquin?
So I'm definitely going to join you, and it hasn't worked out a ton. He's another guy. He's made a lot of cuts, hasn't really competed a ton. He was good at Mayakoba, but I think what I like, he's right next to Russell Henley, who probably should be popular, but he's going to be. And I think Niemann is still someone uber talented, great scorer. We've seen him compete, even though he's got a lot of, you know, different skill sets. Runner-up at Sony, Mayakoba top five, Heritage at top five. He's done it at some of these technical courses in the past. So no problem starting with Niemann. No problem with Niemann as my second man in either.
Yeah, and I want to thank David. I see it in our chat asking us about the NBA. We've got Luffy and Adam coming up right after us at 5:30 on the Deeper Dive. And then because our buddy Eric is on honeymoon, Greg's going to get, looks like Svaka coming in and joining him at 6:33 till 8 o'clock, a half hour after tip. They're going to stay with you and sweat some of these early games. So for those looking for NBA, check it out. Talk a couple of more guys here. We both like Joaquin Niemann, at least a little bit, enough. Russell Henley, I thought last week's spot, Ben, was so much better for him. And it was a pretty good start. He's been kind of hanging around. His putter's been better. Did you notice, I don't know if you've caught a lot of the golf, he has switched to the Colin Morikawa grip, you know, kind of those, one of those weird finger ones. Maybe it's working. Do you think more fairways this week will help his off the tee problems, which has actually been what's holding him back?
Yeah, I mean, certainly if he's able to get the ball in the fairway, there's few people in this field that I'd want before him in a ball striking contest, and he's pairing it with really good putting. He's just going to be very popular. It's as simple as that. That doesn't mean don't play him. It just is what it is. And you've got Noren right below him, Niemann right above him, Gooch, Kisner, Scott. There's other names in the nines that I feel a little more comfortable with this week.
Me too. And our chat just brought him up. They must have either gotten a word or a look at my cheat sheet or something here. But no, Alex Noren, 18th and 10th in the last 2 years here. If there's a golf course that we want to play Noren on, it's one that we don't have to worry about him hitting the ball off the planet. He's going to hit a ton of fairways here. And he has played a lot better. Ben, I got to be honest. Did he not qualify for the Dubai thing? Is that why he's not playing over there this week?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly what Noren's just had a weird trajectory. You know, he was super high in the official World Golf Rankings, came over here, almost won, should have won. Then he had a horrible stretch after that. Yep. The funny thing about Noren's game, when he first came over here, I envisioned him as like a, he's going to win a US Open type course, 8 under, yep. you know, 10 under. He has lately been more prone to going low in easier courses. He's done a lot better with that. He's a great putter. So I don't worry as much about Noren saying, I need him to shoot 22 under. I think he actually can do that. I didn't think that when he first came over.
Maybe he gave up his, like his, you know, his
status over there.
Yeah. Because I don't see him ranked.
It's possible. He's played a ton over here. I mean,
he has, he's played a full calendar over here. So I wonder if, you know, it's like, and Matt Wallace is in the same category, who is also here this week. We'll talk about him. He's had a very, very weird stretch of golf in the last little bit. I'm going to guess that he just didn't qualify. I've seen him play a couple of tournaments over there. So I'm just going to guess that he just didn't end up qualifying for the race. Yeah. I could be wrong. If chat, if anybody knows, let us know. Am I being held hostage? No, Jordan, I'm not being held hostage.
Get this guy.
Get out of here. No, I'm not being held hostage. I'm going through a renovation in my office, and we just painted the other day. So I haven't put stuff up on the walls yet. I'm not in a hostage room. Thanks, Jordan, for worrying about me, though. I will say that. All right, let's move on to a couple of other guys here in this range. Taylor Gooch has been running hot. I think the run ended last week. I'm not going to play him until the new year. And Adam Scott, 9,000. Wanted to ask you your opinion about him. Maybe a good course if he continues the way he's been putting, continues that. But it was a question mark on why he's here. I didn't really get the fit. Typically, he likes to play courses that are harder, like last week. I don't know. I just didn't see it.
No, I'm kind of with you there. And listen, he's been a guy, popular name in the swing season, rightfully so. Really, really playing good golf. Irons have been crisp. It's more a product of the range. Again, I think that Noren, Neiman, and I like Adam Scott, honestly, as we work down to flat nine. So I have other priorities in this range.
Okay, so a couple of them might be traps. And that's what I've labeled the next one, because I have had a problem, at least personally lately, getting this 8K range right. Last week, it was Christian Bezuidenhout for me. Cost me a cash in the big lineup. I had a fine rest of my other build. Keith Mitchell, while he finished in 30th, scored well. Patrick Reed scored well. Russell Henley came in the top 10. So I had a great build then. Just couldn't find that mid-8 guy to get me over the hump. So I want you to help me this week. We have a list of names. I'm going to run them off to you quickly. Keegan Bradley, Max Homa, Justin Rose, Mackenzie Hughes, Brendan Todd, Mito Pereira, Johnny Vegas. Those are the 6 or 7 names that I'm interested in this range. Tell me your favorite and tell me which one you want to fade.
So interesting, because I'm going to have a follow-up for you here. But
yeah,
so Mackenzie Hughes, I do think is suited to actually do very well here. Just the way he plays. It's ridiculous because you look at his ball striking and you're just like, this guy sucks. But it doesn't matter because he's so good around the green. He's so good with the putter. He is an incredibly effective player, even when he's just zero with the approach. So I think you go there. The one I'm having the biggest trouble with is Justin Rose. I don't even know with this guy anymore. He shows flashes of it. He takes kind of the quote unquote class drop like we see here at Wyndham, and he was very good. Then he returns to doing nothing. 57th at CJ Cup, 40th at Mayakoba. I know he's a great putter. I just truly don't know where Justin Rose's game is at week in and week out.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing this for 5 or 6 years, same amount of time as you have, and we've never seen Justin Rose play this many tournaments in the fall swing. There's no doubt about that. You know, typically he's playing over in Europe and, again, trying to win the race to Dubai, which has a $9 million prize fund, much bigger than this, what we have going here at Sea Island. So, yeah, it's very weird. I'm more tempted to go down to Mito Pereira. I haven't really played him yet. This fall, he's been popular, and I feel like we're getting to a point where now people are starting to forget about him. We had a decent start last week at Houston. 8,100, 10% owned. I think it's a good spot for him.
Yeah, I mean, Mito is someone he really kind of – it's funny. He was scorching hot, goes to the Olympics and all of that. We really haven't seen or heard much from him in the sense of impact finishes. He hasn't been terrible. But he's been fine. And the ball striking is still very, very secure. So I don't mind that. Again, I think it's just prioritizing what you want to do in this range. But you mentioned everyone here except, and I don't know, maybe you're one in some type of mega mind genius game. What about the bucket hat, man? What about Joel Dahman?
Yeah. So Joel Dahmen.
He's got the hat. It'll protect him from the wind. He'll be fine.
He's got to be one of the best personalities on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, he's great.
He's playing good golf. I mean, kind of quietly playing really good golf. Ends up in the top five last week out of nowhere. Here's the thing. We got to go back and look. And I noticed, you know, after his win in the Dominican last year, he kind of disappeared for a bit. So do we enjoy the win too much? Do we, you know, maybe just want to go spend time with the, you know, the family? I don't know what it is. We'll have to look. He's in a good spot, but 8,500. I don't know. I can't remember the last time. Maybe it hasn't been. Maybe they haven't played enough to be like, all right, yeah, I'm definitely going to play Joel Dahmen over Mito Pereira. You know, I feel like I haven't said that enough. But Joel Dahmen has certainly earned the spot. So, yeah, are you playing him this week? It sounds like maybe you are. Yeah.
I do. I think that, you know, it's a guy who's made every cut in swing season, coming off a top five, gained 7.5 strokes tee to green, winner on an island track. You already talked about that. I think he's got a lot to like. So price is right. I think he's going to be pretty popular just because of the finish last week. But I think that Joel Dahmen, you mentioned it, breakthrough, and this happens. Breakthrough, then you get to a lull. I think the swing season's been a good catalyst for him to say, okay, I'm back. Time to get back to business here. And it looks like he's starting to do that.
Yeah, Brendan Todd's kind of in that boat a little bit. I mean, it was going very bad. Then a T22 at Fortnite, matched up with a T11 at Mayakoba. Maybe those courses are a little bit better suited for him, or is the par 70, 7,000 yards, 75% fairways where we want to be playing Brendan Todd? Again, I just think the sticker price is too much, not to cut you off, but can get the same thing out of Patrick Rogers, it feels like, and he hits the ball a lot further.
Yeah, can confirm. I mean, I'm with you. I think Brendan Todd, I think all these courses for swing season do cater more towards like the Brendan Todds than, you know, I shouldn't say all of them, but like a lot of these driver heavy guys. You know, when you're playing these island coastal tracks, they're really, really hamstrung off the tee. There's just not that much reward. So Brendan Todd hangs in there. I just don't want to pay mid eights for him. I'd rather bump to certainly Dahmen. Chris Kirk is below him. Sheamus is below him. We'll talk about Matt Kuchar. There's just a lot of other names that I think are in better spots.
So let me ask a hypothetical here. This guy is 8,100 this week. If he shoots 70 on Sunday, even par, finishes at 6 under in a tie with Joel Dahmen for, I think, fourth or fifth, one of those two. Does Johnny Vegas get a higher price tag and a higher ownership than what we're seeing? I mean, he shot 75 on Sunday, goes from the top five to a T26. No one's going to be looking at him. So I guess I'm just throwing the hypothetical like, hey, maybe there's a reason we want to play him. Those two little things go differently, and we're looking at a whole different set of ownership and price tag.
I think there is something to that in general, just little edges that aren't quantified by most. And Johnny Vegas, the other thing I like about him is, I mean, maybe this is why I should be scared, but it's like, when I think about this course, I don't think of Johnny Vegas's game. You know, he's so strong off the tee, but that could be different. And he's shown, you know, when you look at his finishes, obviously this guy's a winner on tour several times over, but he's played good. He was second in Puerto Rico. It's not like he can only play at bomber heavy courses. So it's not my preferred build, but Johnny Vegas is an interesting tournament play this week.
Yeah, was he in, you mentioned he was in Puerto Rico. He was up for that. Was he also in the mix for the Joel Dahmen one down at Dominican? I feel like he's been in these island events a couple of times and played well.
One of those. Yeah, he had a top 20 in Corrales. Yep. And he was second in Puerto Rico. He's played a lot of golf at a lot of these type of venues. He has a fourth at Honda. I'm going back a while here, but he has shown he can handle a lot of different types of courses.
Speaking of Honda, by the way, the correlation between Honda and Memorial Park seemed to be pretty high last week. Something to take note of. All of the column bombers that end up have played well at the Honda, at least had a chance to play with Luke List, Keith Mitchell, Wyndham Clark. All those guys were kind of in it last week. Even Kevin Tway, what a name to bring up there. Speaking of Kevin Tway, he'll be in the field here this week, as will Matt Kuchar. Now, Matt Kuchar, man, since he decided not to pay his caddy, has done nothing. And it wasn't his caddy. I guess it was a loaner caddy. But he has basically done nothing for a year and a half. Honest to God, it's been really bad. Now, all of a sudden, 7,900 after three straight made cuts here this season. Nothing to be terribly excited about, but nothing that he's hurt you with either. So is Matt Kuchar really back in your player pool this week?
first time in a long time. Making cuts, 22nd at Mayakoba, 35th at Shriners, 36th at Fortnite.
Seems to be good rolling. Course for him. Yeah.
Price is right. I think it's got to be a buy low spot, as I'm not the biggest Matt Kuchar guy, and I don't know how good he really is at this point, but I think in a field like this, he could be very effective.
Now, I've got everything that I've wanted out of this next guy in this fall, which has been two missed cuts, two basically last place finishes, six birdies on his card last week. I mean, just all around dreadful. But I asked for it, and I asked for a decently high price tag this week so that we'd get no ownership, and we've gotten all of that. So are you going to join me on playing Brian Harman in his home course event after no ownership and after a year where basically he outperformed almost every single week last year?
That's an interesting name. Yeah, I don't know what is like. I mean, the game looked dicey.
It's so bad. Yeah, it's so bad.
He hasn't done anything with the irons in quite some time.
Yep.
If you're going to play him, you're just blindly backing, knowing who Brian Harman is on a long-term scale. Like, he's a good putter. He's not a long hitter. He's a, you know, he's a grinder. He's a player. There's no doubt. It's just his recent form is, that's
for somebody priced this high. It's definitely the worst form. It's not even close. So I guess it's like you said, I'm kind of just blindly backing the outperformance that we got so many times last year and getting less than 5% ownership on it, more than likely. Charles Howell's also here. Any interest?
So kind of indifferent, to be honest. I definitely like Kuchar more than him. CH3 does some things that certainly are going to translate. He's that kind of guy. He makes a lot of cuts. I don't think he contends as much as he should. And that's the thing. You've got on the other side, Patrick Rogers, who is the opposite. Guy misses a ton of cuts, but when he makes the cut, he comes in like the top 10 more often than you would think. So I think it's just risk tolerance based off who else is on your lineup.
With 156 players in the field this week, it goes so deep because there's a lot of options and a way to kind of decipher through those options, or at least see who we're playing and matching up, but maybe who Ben is playing, who Alex is playing, or Steve. Check out our Pro Plays tool that is part of our premium package there. But if you want to check out some of our premium tools that we have free today, PGA rankings are free, the NHL top stacks, and the main slate ownership projections for NBA. You know, NBA streets have been fun this year, so check out the ownership projections free today for you. As we continue in this trap section, I want to ask about two golfers that are, I would say, playing probably pretty good. Way better than maybe I would have thought at the beginning of this fall, and are priced at 7,700. So, Ben, I want to know, are these two golfers traps this week, or are they good plays? Patrick Rogers and Danny Lee, both with two top 10s in their last four starts.
They're just both. So, I mean, I'll start with Danny Lee. Danny Lee would go miscut, second, seventh.
Just yes.
That's what you get. And Patrick Rogers has intertwined miscuts in with top 10 finishes. The problem with these type of guys, I know this sounds ridiculous, I don't know if recent form is a catalyst to how they're going to play the next week. So you see them build up and you're like, oh man, this is great. Danny Lee's playing good golf. I don't know if that's an indication that he's about to play more good golf, because he turns it on and turns it off borderline randomly. And that's very, very difficult.
Another guy that's priced in this range that has had just a silly last 12 weeks is Matt Wallace. I mean, the guy goes over to Europe after the PGA Tour season is done, doesn't make a cut, misses the cut at Sanderson's, then all of a sudden throws up a T14 and a T4. The T4 at Zozo against a really quality field, goes back to Europe and misses the cut again twice. I mean, obviously he's trying to do the both tour thing here, you know, and it obviously, I mean, this guy was top of the European tour a couple of years ago, so it's not really working out for him in his best interest. But is this a spot where we try and get the top 15, top 10 finish out of Wallace, or is there just too much miscut equity there for you to play him at $7,600 this week?
I think it's pretty close. Certainly, I wouldn't push back if he's in someone's pool and they like him. I think it's just a pretty good range, though. You've got guys right below him. Adam Long, I took a long look at. I've been playing Troy Merritt. Rio is there. Aaron Rye has played a lot better. So I think you're competing with those shares. Matt Wallace is a player. I mean, he's done it in majors. He's good, very, very good. But at the same time, another guy, I think he slams the trunk a lot in this spot. So if he's going to be popular, I'll go elsewhere.
Jason Day popped on the leaderboard last week at Houston. I don't really know what to say other than I'll say this about him. We know that he has a volatile game, right? We definitely get that. But his birdie count last week in the field was pretty good comparatively. I mean, Jason Kokrak obviously led the field, but Jason Day was top 10 in birdies, had 15 for the week. That's at least a sign that he can score. I don't know that his game is ready to compete yet. 7,600. I don't know. I think it will be again. I mean, it's hard for me to say that a number one golfer, a former number one golfer in the world that I think has a ton of talent is never going to be good again unless he's never able to get healthy, right? Obviously, that's the caveat there. If Jason Day is able to get healthy, I think he'll be a force on the PGA Tour again. Right now, we're not there. He's still trying to find him. But do you want to play him here at the RSM Classic? That's the question.
Yeah, so that's the thing. I think that Day has it in him. We see flashes. We see it in showdown. We see it for 18 holes. We see it for a back nine.
See it for six holes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know if he has it for 4 days just yet. And for me, you're not – Jason Day is not – and I know it sounds crazy, but he could be in the sixes soon enough. So, like, I'm not going to pay a mid-range price tag. He's competing against guys that are making cuts week in and week out. And I think we're – like, Jason Day came in 54th at Houston. I think most people came away encouraged by that. And I think that just kind of shows exactly where he's at right now.
So the moniker used to be just play Robert Streb at this event here and you'd be fine. But that's kind of changed lately. He's played really good golf. Two top tens in his last four starts. All four made cuts. One of them was a no-cut event, or maybe two of them were. But still, made the cut in all of them, played the weekend. Now 7,500 at a course that clearly he's good at. I mean, do we play him? Is there an ownership? How about this? Is there an ownership spot where we don't play him, say over 10, over 15%? Doesn't look like it's going to get there, though.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be too popular. So if you like the play, I certainly think you can click it in. I just don't know if I really like the play. You've got Adam Long right there coming in off three straight made cuts as well. He's a very, very good scorer. You've got Merritt, who's made three of four, and I do like his game when he gets crazy hot with the putter. And then I'm going to, again, mention Aaron Rye, who is
another guy. Yeah, I was just going to say, hit him up against Aaron Rye, and who you picking on a 1v1?
I'd take Aaron Rye. Really, really good player. Yep. Always was excited to see him in Europe. He's come over, making the most of it. Took some ebbs and flows, but lately, ball striking clinic last couple of weeks, and I think that continues.
Yeah, you mentioned last week for Rye, who's, as typically gets it done with everywhere. Last week was just on fire with his irons. And he's a golfer that, now we haven't seen enough, so I can't go out and say, hey, Ben, this is the Ches Reavie of the PGA Tour. But the sample size that I've seen, it's when he gets into form, he stays there. So I will be clicking Aaron Rye's name certainly this week quite a bit. I did like Robert Streb. I do like this range. Also in there is Hayden Buckley, who I mentioned two top tens, or actually two top fives, if I'm not mistaken. And then another guy that has also played pretty well that is on the European Tour most of the time, but again, now playing on the PGA Tour through the Korn Ferry, is Matthias Schwab. Didn't have a good week with his irons last week comparatively to Rye, obviously. So I'm going to say you're going to stick with Aaron, or are you going to have a little Mateus as well?
I mean, I love that guy. One of my favorites, but
gained putting last week, Ben. Gained almost three strokes.
You can't be doing that. You don't have the luxury. As you mentioned, his putting at times is few and far between. He wasted it.
He wasted it on T35. Yeah.
It's... You know, he needs to be more of a ball striker because his putting is pretty weak consistently. I think Aaron Rye right now is just simply more well-rounded. He's in form. I'm a big fan of Schwab. I think he belongs over here. I just don't know if I want to play him this week.
Oh, Spaz, John Spaz in our chat said, listen, Ben, Merritt hasn't gained on the green since the 3M. Don't do it to yourself.
So I do want to say part of me says, okay, that's true. I mean, absolutely. But look at the results. If you would tell me that, and I would say, man, he's probably missed all the cuts. He's got a 16th, a 28th, and a 15th. He's got some missed cuts. But like, if the putter comes along and that's his weapon, the ball striking's been actually better from Troy Merritt. And that's a surprise. So I almost feel like he's close. And if he brings his biggest weapon on Bermuda, I don't mind it. Having said that, it could end in shame, but
well, let's just leave it on a good note there, and let's talk about Lanto Griffin, who's also in this area. 8,100 last week. It did surprise me a little bit on the price. He played well, you know, for two rounds. I think, you know, where did he shoot? Yeah, he putted well, actually, rounds one and two. He gained six strokes putting for the first two rounds. Lost them all back over the weekend. Is there anything that makes you want to play Lanto Griffin this week?
So I get it. I took a long look at it, and I do think he kind of has the approach that I want, which is, you know, get your irons going, make your putts. You don't need to be long off the tee, do what you do, but it's just not really happening. I think there's maybe a couple outliers in there. You zoom out, he was awful for a long stretch of 2021. And I think that I'm not going to let a couple tournaments mask all that. If I was building like 150, he'd probably be in the pool, but I'd rather play all the guys around him.
Is Sebastian Munoz one of those guys?
Yeah, I think Sebastian Munoz is a better tournament play because he can just get super hot on Bermuda. He hasn't done a ton, but I do feel like when he spikes, it's even better than Lanto. So I look at him. Hadwin is there. I think Hadwin's a fine fit for a course like this. Good putter, playing, got some reps in. So you'd have different options. Again, I think risk tolerance. And then former champ Tyler Duncan is there. I want to ask your thoughts on old T-Dunks, who is coming in. He's made three straight cuts. Everything looks good tee to green. I don't think it's crazy to just press his name and hope for a similar finish again.
Looks like he's coming off of 4-under Sunday too. So
he's playing well.
Coming in with confidence. Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't looked into T-Duncan. I'll probably have a couple of shares now that you mention it. He's priced right there with Henrik Norlander, who people loved last week. And it seemed like it was a good spot. You know, I kind of joined them with him, but an 8-over Sunday kind of just killed everything. And it was bad everywhere. He's typically really good with his irons and wasn't last week, except for one round. So I'm out on Norlander. I would rather play Duncan. Adam Hadwin has also had a better fall. Had not been playing good at all, Ben. So I think if I had to pick one guy in this range, oh boy.
Tough range.
Oh man. So let me ask you about Doug Gim, because this is what I do. I go back to Doug Gim. He's made 5 of 6 cuts in the fall. A couple of those have been, you know, the Zozo or what have you. So it was a no cut. At what point do I give up on a player that is at least making, you know, giving me 4 rounds of golf because he has no upside, or we haven't seen the upside?
You know, he's someone at the beginning of the show, we're talking about these guys that could break through in the swing season. I think he was a pretty popular choice for that. He just hasn't put it together. Yep. Not playing awful, but I just don't know exactly what Doug Gim is doing in terms of, like, it's not one area. And you can look at that one of two ways. You could say, well, that means he's pretty close. But you also could look at it and say, like,
where's it going to come from?
Yeah. Where does it come from? How does he win the tournament? How does he compete? Because he's pretty average across the board, from off the tee to putting to around the green to obviously ball striking. So I just am a little concerned that he has no identity to his game right now.
I would much rather play all three of these next golfers. Keith Mitchell, obviously part of that Sea Island Mafia. He's a guy that I loved last week, and he was in position, was doing everything for me, and then just got icy cold with the putter, which is his MO. It can absolutely happen with Keith Mitchell, but I like him. Dylan Fratelli, maybe a product of a good fit last week. Maybe I don't want to play him as much. But this next guy, Alex Smalley, continues to roll on. I don't know how I can get myself to play Doug Gim over Alex Smalley. Smalley's won almost every single time going head-to-head, so are you with me there? Do we need to start giving Alex Smalley a little bit more?
Alex Smalley has been, so I usually, and you know this, I rely on you for this. Yeah. I'm usually late to the Korn Ferry guys. I take more of a wait and see approach because I'm just not familiar with them. Alex Smalley has been the one guy that I've played pretty consistently so far this year. And it's actually worked out really nicely. Well-rounded player. Just seems like he's just solid in all areas. He's making cuts. And I don't really see anything why he wouldn't keep that going. So I like Alex Smalley a lot. And I think people are starting to realize this is a guy that can definitely exist on tour and be very effective.
Yeah, and of course I'm getting made fun of for never being able to drop guys when they're just not.
Well, I know how that goes.
And it's just, I just chase it. But this week, I think Alex Smalley is going to get the spot over Doug Gim in that kind of lineup for me. I'm not going to lie. I think it's at this point he's earned it. So line up your Doug Gim top 10 bets here this week. It'll happen. All right, let's go into some bombs before we go into the last section here. We've got about 8 to 10 minutes, although the next show is at 5:30. So maybe if we went over by a minute, Tyler behind the glass won't get too mad at us. But let's talk about some bombs, and then we'll get into the core guys that I want to look at, that I want to build around. So first, Cam Davis. I've tried to play him a little bit. 6,900 in this field, Ben, there's no way a month and a half ago you and I wouldn't have jumped all over this, maybe 2 months ago. So are we that far removed from good golf of Cam Davis and now he's just bad again? Or is this the spot for him?
So I think he's playing pretty bad, to be honest. I still think if you're building maybe different types of lineups, a little more aggressive off the tee or something like that, he could work his way in. But there's no doubt that Cam Davis, who showed he's a player and he can do it, has kind of slunk back. And he's in an interesting range. You've got guys like Chad Ramey is there.
Let's talk about him for a second.
Sure.
This guy coming off the Korn Ferry Tour, I think he made like 41 of 42 cuts. It was something ridiculous. Come on the PGA Tour. And of course, you and I both know from doing this, unless you're some of the best golfers in the world, you're likely going to miss plenty of cuts. It's just what happens. But does that concern you about the translation of the game between the Korn Ferry and the PGA Tour? He had that one good start at the Shriners. He definitely had a chance. He was in that golf tournament. Didn't end up in the top 10. But you got to think that the skills that we saw on the Korn Ferry, which was a lot of fairways and a lot of greens, it's got to translate. Do we just stick with it until it happens? Or do we not play him until it happens?
Yeah, so that's always the age-old question. Like, do you want to take the wait and see? You lose nothing. But if he breaks through early, you gain nothing. If you're early, you're going to take some missed cuts, but you might get paid off if Chad Ramey, you know, throws up a top five at some point. Mm-hmm. And I think given that this guy, we've seen flashes of it, when you're talking sub 7K, there's not that many other guys where it's like, well, I'm nervous. Let me just take the guy who I know is going to make the cut. Those right. don't exist down here. So you're going to take risk no matter what. I'm okay with Chad Ramey this week if you want to punt.
If you want to go a little bit more conservative, let's give a couple of names there. Chez Reavie, we just talked about, or I just mentioned kind of about Aaron Rye. He is playing better. Also there, Denny McCarthy playing much better. Seems to have had some distance off the tee from practicing with Bryson DeChambeau as well. So that's an interesting name. Then the last one, Lucas Glover. Seems like a really good fit. Seems like his price, it's to me, is one of the craziest out there. He'll be 8,400 and everybody will want him. And then he'll be 6,800 and nobody will want to roster him with not much form difference. So for me, I think Lucas Glover is probably maybe the most, you know, comfortable play down there at 7,000 or below. How about you? You got another name or you agree on Glover?
Yeah, I don't mind Glover. I mean, he's right next to Scott Piercy, who did gain 7 strokes in the approach in Houston. Now his putter is completely shot. So I don't know about that. I think people are going to go to Russell Knox, JJ Spawn, those types. I don't hate it, but at the same time, I don't know. But I did want to ask you about one guy as we work down a little more. Mm-hmm. Is Nick Hardy. He's someone that I'm not super familiar with, but every time I play this guy, he makes a lot of cuts. Seems like a very well-rounded player. Kind of reminds me of Alex Smalley. 6,500 for Nick Hardy. I think that might be my preferred, you know, mid sixes range.
This guy was 7,800 at Bermuda.
Yeah,
so
he was good.
Clearly the odds makers in Vegas gave him a 60 or 70 to one tag there. And here he is at RSM, which is, you know, I mean, it's probably a little bit better than Bermuda Field. It's obviously a bigger field. Yeah. I like Nick Hardy at 6,500. I was hoping you were going to bring him up. I thought it would be a good spot. Known for a good ball striker. We saw him get it done on the PGA Tour in his couple of starts last year. So I do like him. Another guy that I like, two of his best finishes on the PGA Tour are Matthew Neesmith. He popped last week, had a bad Sunday, but two top 15s here and Ben, 6,800, low ownership. I think it's fine. Coming off the Korn Ferry Tour a couple of years ago, I don't think Chad Ramey's any better than him. Let's put it that way.
No, I mean, again, this is where you have to, I think, adjust maybe expectations. And it's not to say like, oh, I expect my guy to play awful. It's just week to week, what are you getting? You're not going to get 10 made cuts in a row. And if you do, he's going to be really popular. Someone like Neesmith and these guys, you're looking for, okay, what happens when he's on? Well, that's good, really good at times. His irons have been electric. He's gained 6 strokes or more with the irons in 2 of his last 4 rounds that or tournaments that we have strokes gained data for. The difference is that the game is not well-rounded in the sense he's a bad putter and things come and go. When he loses, he tends to lose a lot. So I think that's the kind of a tournament play. You know me with Peter Uihlein. I think Peter Uihlein is that elite putter at times, likes this kind of tournament, likes this kind of layout. He's just not a consistent player, and I'm never going to try to predict when Uihlein's going to pop, if ever.
He, again, was 7,700 if we're talking about the Bermuda, yeah. But that's just it's where he was. Here's an interesting name. Davis Thompson. He was one of the PGA Tour U grads coming out this year. Big name in the area as well. I think this is the one, if I'm not mistaken, Ben, that his dad is actually the tournament director, if I'm not mistaken. So obviously he's going to get a start. He guaranteed himself 8 starts on the Korn Ferry Tour through the Korn Ferry Tour qualifying event. 6,400. Is this a case where you're going to try and play the prospective talent that could be there, or is this just too far away from playing good golf for you to roster? He popped up at Congaree. I don't know if you remember, and played pretty well there, actually gave a pretty good value, but that's the last time we really heard from him.
Yeah. I mean, this guy's played RSM a couple of times, which I kind of like. He has made the cut there in recent years. I think that what I'd say to something like this, if you're like, I really like Scheffler and I also want Louis, well, this is a way to tap into a double 10, you know, north of 10K range. And there are guys down here that are going to play well. It's just, if I don't need to do it, I probably won't. But I want to ask you before we get out of here.
Yeah.
I've got one. He's not a crazy name. He's just playing awful. I don't know if he's ever going to turn it around, but Sneds is going to be unowned. He's 250-1 in the betting market. He has done, when I say nothing, he's been playing as bad a golf as I've seen anybody, but this is the type of course that old Sneds would love.
You know, it seems like he's got like a mental, now listen, I'm not a psychologist. I don't try to be, but it seems like he's got a mental block. All right, let's look at his round one scores, 68, 69, 68, 66. What's wrong with that? Those are pretty good round one scores. One would think you would make at least 50% of your cuts coming in with those scores. No. His round two score, 74, 73, 70 at the Shriners, 71 at the World Wide Tech, 74 at Houston. It's like he's having a mental block getting through the cut right now. But if Sneds gets through the cut with how good of a putter he is, he's going to give you value. I just can't do it until we see something something pretty drastic. Because like you said, it looks broken.
As a large field, any interest in maybe a Thursday showdown if he's on Plantation?
See, with him, the par fives don't even really matter.
Yeah, they probably heard him.
Here's a name I want to I'll give you down here for showdown purposes, maybe even a little bit for week long. Andrew Novak is a guy that had the Monday qualify. He's from the Korn Ferry Tour, graduated, playing here on the PGA Tour this year. Had the Monday qualify into Mayakoba, did so, came in a tie for 22nd, and lives here in Sea Island. Probably not many people know this one or this name. If I'm going to go this low, Ben, at 6,300, I think I'm going to click Novak. He's just, we've seen him Monday qualify, which you know is ridiculously hard to do, and then put up 4 good rounds in Mayakoba, which may be a similar track. This is probably easier than Mayakoba. I think I'm going to give Andrew Novak a couple of shares this week.
Perfect way to wrap it up, because I don't even know who that is. That is going to be a true one percenter, and that's putting it mildly. Andrew Novak. Steve like Novak's that, yeah. Long-lost brother, maybe.
JT Poston, he's a guy that you want to talk about. He's playing ridiculously bad. If you need more, if you need more than Andrew Novak down here, I'll probably play Brandon Wu. I'm not going to lie to you. I'll have a share. Doc Redman did make a cut, but Brandon Hagee. Okay, that was the last name I want to talk to you about in 2021 for the golf season. Brandon Hagee, 6,200. Seems kind of cheap. He's played better.
Yeah, I mean he's an interesting name because he's such a bomber, but he actually, I think, thrives when he's able to tone it down, and he can still take his length to an advantage. He just is hitting, you know, shorter irons and whatnot. So the form is gone, but he's someone that when he flashes and it only a couple times a year, you're going to get a top five or top 10. I think, again, we're talking about large field tournaments. I see no reason why I would want to isolate him. But if you play 2 or 5% of him, you're probably getting 2 to 5x on the field. So you don't need a lot to potentially have a nice payoff.
Yeah, Trey Mullinex, who Eric and I talk about. Yeah, he's down there as well. So is Kirk Kitayama. So plenty of guys. All right. The Tournament of Champions, a fantastic event at a great golf course there in Kapalua, where I think actually Eric is right now, will be the next time that we chat. That is in about a month and a half. So everybody enjoy the longest offseason we've had in a couple of years. We're going to have some great stuff coming back at the new year for the golf product here, as golf betting and, of course, PGA DFS continue to take off, and golf betting really does take off. So stay tuned for that. And Ben, where can we catch you? We can catch you, of course, on the breakfast menu show and a couple of other places, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You'll be seeing me, Awesome Odds YouTube channel. If you guys haven't been over there and you enjoy it, head on over. And of course, with college football, college basketball, the NFL, all that type of stuff.
Well, college basketball being back must be just...
College basketball is fantastic. And you know what? You never know. If the hero has stuff, maybe you'll see us a little bit. But
yeah, maybe at least for a leaderboard.
Maybe just a five-minute version, a little VOD. But no, we'll have some fun. Well, obviously, you got our handles right there at DFS Golfer 23, at Jazz DFS. We're going to talk to you guys. It's not like we're going to be strangers. And come the new year, new tools, new everything, a lot of fun here. No better time to get involved with the Awesome community.
And that'll do it for us. Thanks, everybody. Good luck. Take down the 100K this week at the RSM Classic, and we will see you in January for the Tournament of Champions. Cheers.